Listen to the government. The United States government. No, $14.6 trillion, B. All my credit cards would have been cut off a long time before that. All I'm asking y'all to do is balance a fucking budget, B. That's all y'all got to do. Son, we voted for y'all because we were worried about gay rights, marijuana getting legalized, all of these other things that we were concerned about. How can we get roads, more money for schools? Your bastards can't even balance a checkbook. A checkbook, B? This is something every American has to go through every week. We got to figure out what we're going to pay, what we got to put off a little bit. You bastards got the $14.6 trillion before you realize, oh, shit, we've reached the debt ceiling. Listen, you're the best and the brightest. Harvard, Yale, Brown, Cornell, this is what we put out. Should have went to Norfolk State. Bastards, you would have got the same education. You would have spent a whole lot less money. Simple fucks. All I'm saying to you is, and this isn't personal, this isn't Democratic or Republican, this is everybody. Stop being a dickhead and balance the fucking budget. My second question, though, my second issue is, how the fuck do you owe China, B? How you owe China? How can I tell my daughter with a straight face that capitalism is a better system than communism if we're borrowing all of our fucking money from the biggest communist country on the fucking planet? You ass, get your... Ooh, stop your lying. Television appearances until you got my fucking budget balance. And I'm gonna tell you this, Everybody who has a loan to the federal government, fuck paying it. Don't pay your budget, don't pay your bills, because they ain't paying this. The fuck I gotta pay my bills for if you don't pay your bills? I'm not doing what you don't do. You're the leader. I'm following. You don't pay, I don't pay. How about that, simple motherfuckers? What is your credit score? What's the government's credit score right now? It's gotta be a 350. But you motherfuckers gonna tell me I can't buy a car if my credit score is at a certain number? Your whole life is a 350, B. Your FICO score, your Experian, fucking TransUnion, all your shit's low, B. Get your shit together. President Obama, personal to you, all the black people was proud. We got a black president. You acting like one right now, B. Pay your fucking bills on time. Stop. I ain't even got, it's too fucking hot for me to talk. I'm sweating and shit. Shit got me sweating. You know why? Because y'all ain't paid a fucking light bill on Earth. That's why it's 37 fucking states right now going through a heat wave. Because not only y'all not pay the fucking Chinese, y'all didn't pay the fucking light bill. You see how fucking hot it is? I'm pissed the fuck. I can't. Again, you know how we do, man. I'm out here. I want to talk about something real quick. Next Wednesday, November 9th, kind of excited about this. I'm excited, you know what I mean? Every now and then, something happens in your life, and you get a chance to meet one of your heroes, or you get a chance to meet someone that you've had an opportunity to admire. And I get the chance Wednesday to sit down on a panel with two gentlemen whose intellect I respect very highly. That's Mark Lamont Hill and Michael Eric Dyson. Looking forward to that. The brothers over at Pace University, the Black Student Union, have put together a program called Black Maybe. Anyone who's going to be in New York City, Wednesday, 7 o'clock, Pace University, in the multipurpose room, we're going to be talking about, the topic is going to be called Black Maybe. Won't go too far into that, but it got me to thinking about some other stuff. I posted the flyer on Facebook and Twitter, and I had some people asking me questions like, you know, why are you doing that? Why would you have a blacks-only type of city? First of all, let's be clear. It's not open to blacks only. It's at Pace University. It's open to the public. It's free. Anyone can come in. We need to stop being afraid to engage the racial debate. This is the problem. People get on. It's scary. Like, there's going to be a race riot anytime you bring up a racial issue. It's not called playing the race card. It's what's going on. I'll give you an example. And this is for my good white friends who want to help. Thank you, guys. Here's the problem with that, though. You can't really help another family with a family problem. You got to let them work it out. Understand from the outside looking in your mind, it seems really simple. All you have to do is this. Black people, the ones who are telling me, stop talking about our problems in front of white people. Dude, black-on-black crime is not something that is hidden in the black community. It's on TV every day. I'm not pointing it out. I'm not the first person to show it. Because I'm black, I can't talk about it. It's there. I don't have to talk about teen pregnancy. It's there. I don't talk about guys pulling their pants all the way down by the face. It's there. It's there. The culture is there. The flaws are there. And the good parts are there. The parts that they emulate are there, whether I point them out or not. The parts that Plus, if they don't want to emulate us there, well, what about or not? Can we stop acting like racism is the elephant in the room and walk around and like, all right, stop there. That's an end table. That's not an end table. It's a fucking elephant. It's in the middle of the room. Kick the elephant. Move the elephant. Do something with the elephant. But please stop walking by the elephant like the elephant doesn't exist. All right? So listen. I don't care what race you are. Black, white, indifferent. You want to come out? You want to hear the speech? You want to see the panel? You want to hear what the three gentlemen have to say? I'm one of the gentlemen. Come on out. Listen to what we have to say. It's a question and answer period. You want to ask questions? Ask questions. I don't care what race you are. But let's stop acting like if we just ignore it, it'll go away. Listen, if you have herpes and you ignore it, it's still not going to go away. You have bumps on your penis or on your vagina. You can't just ignore it. It's not going away. Racism is a sickness. And even if it affects fewer and fewer people every day, you still have to continue to vaccinate it until it goes away completely. Because until it goes away completely, somebody's still going to be discriminated against. Cut it out. Stop acting like we're a la-la land. Oh, if you just don't talk about it, no one will ever experience racism. No one. Yes, you will. Cut it out. Klan still exists. There are parties out there. Listen, there's still black people out there who hate white people. There's still white people who hate black people. There are Mexicans who hate both. Cut it out. Just cut that out. Stop sucking on Skittles and unicorn dust. It's not real. Stop it, B. Racism is still real. And until we address it head on, stop being afraid of conflict and actually talk to people and say what you really think out in public and not just in your homes amongst your own smaller groups. Stop going anywhere. Listen, I'm a social scientist. I don't talk about politics a lot. Talk about whatever I want to. Know why? I can't. We would not watch it. So, still my channel. I do what I want to do. Keep in mind, social science. I told y'all this before. Public service announcement. These videos are designed to change your life. Make you think about things a little differently. Okay, if you agree with me. I'm never kidding if you agree with me. I appreciate the comments. Positive and negative. Say whatever you want to say. Just say something. But get involved. Racism? Stop it, B. Cut it out. Come out Wednesday, November 9th. See me, Michael Eric Dyson, Mark Lamont Hill, talking about black maybe. Maybe next time I'll talk about white maybe. Find out what the white people are doing. What it means to be white. Can you define that? What does it mean to be American? Or the land of the... You don't know. Cut it out. Let's do our thing, man. Let me cook. Woo! I'm out of here, man.
He killing the world side hip hop shit there. Wrap it up, my man. This is time to be himself. The lawyer's not so smart.
Sorry.
still painted on pants, I believe it's okay if you can slap the shit out of him. Because obviously, he does not have a father figure in his life. He needs more father figures. Tell his father your son. If you have sons out there, father your fucking sons. So have your sons walk around here in panties. Because that's what the fuck they are, tight ass pants. You got on Jenkins, nigga. Jenkins. If it's a motherfucking pair of pants that you have to use two words to describe and you to make two words into one word, you're not supposed to conjunction motherfucking jeans and leggings. Jenkins is not the shit. What the fuck I'm trying to tell you? You have a box of pants. Then box of brief pants. Your box of briefs should not go all the way down to your ankles. You understand how much I'm a grown citizen.
Obedient workers. People who are just smart enough to run the machines and do the paperwork and and just dumb enough to passively accept all these increasingly shittier jobs with the lower pay, the longer hours, the reduced benefits, the end of overtime, and the vanishing pension that disappears the minute you go to collect it. And now they're coming for your Social Security money. They want your fucking retirement money. They want it back so they can give it to their criminal friends on Wall Street. And you know something? They'll get it. They'll get it all from you sooner or later because they own this fucking place. It's a big club, and you ain't in it. You and I are not in the big club. By the way, it's the same big club they use to beat you over the head with all day long when they tell you what to believe. All day long, beating you over the head in their media, telling you what to believe, what to think, and what to buy. The table is tilted, folks. The game is rigged, and nobody seems to notice. Nobody seems to care. Good, honest, hardworking people, white collar, blue collar, doesn't matter what color shirt you have on. Good, honest, hardworking people continue. These are people of modest means. Continue to elect these rich cocksuckers who don't give a fuck about them. They don't give a fuck about you. They don't give a fuck about you. They don't care about you at all. At all. At all. You know? And nobody seems to notice. Nobody seems to care. That's what the owners count on. The fact that Americans will probably remain willfully ignorant of the big red, white, and blue dick that's being jammed up their assholes every day. Because the owners of this country know the truth. It's called the American dream, but you have to be asleep to believe it.
Hello, Fred.
Well, good evening to you too, darling.
How are
and
you?
Of course, you're playing my most favorite of people. George Carlin has got it so on the head, and you couldn't
mm-hmm.
have played a most appropriate piece tonight. As you know, John is dead, and I got the privilege to call Social Security yesterday and say, well, no, he is dead, and I need to know what do I do from here. I said, oh, you mean like collect your one lump sum? Oh, okay, I guess that's what I'm doing. And John is only worth by Social Security by $255.
Yeah.
So there's going to be a whole whopping $255 put into our checking account
mm-hmm.
for all the 40 quarters that he put in.
Yep.
So George had that right on the head.
Yep.
But other than that, how's everybody this evening?
Everything's good, Fran. How are you?
Today was a rough day, but you know what? It's a good day.
Yeah.
I'm going to be there on the 18th. You might have some unusual people coming. There was a older lady that was looking for some assistance in getting assistance for one of our military people,
uh-huh.
Such as trying to get surgery. There was something that actually bursted. And he had to move here, leave his family, so that he could be looked at here in La Jolla. And, of course, they're postponing him here to have the surgery. So this poor gentleman is just on that treadmill of our government.
Well, you know, there's a... There's a thing on, George did a thing on the illusion of freedom. You ever heard that one?
I've listened to a lot of his stuff. I have to hear a little bit of it to be able to say yes or no.
Okay.
I love George Carlin. I mean, especially his piece on words, you know, and so many people, and yes, I do use the word dead. It offends a number of people, but then I get tired of people saying, well, what do you mean, passed away, he checked out, he left. It's like, well, he's dead. Is that clearer?
Mm-hmm.
And so people just are not getting the point anymore that oftentimes old-fashioned words, like dead,
mm-hmm.
Have its place. It is nice to be polite and all of that, but at the same time, in that politeness, are we missing what people need to hear. That I can't answer.
Yeah. You know, it's, no, it's
crazy. And the doctor says, oh, well, you know, you're doing okay. You do need to lose some weight. Oh, and I would do that so that you can live another 2 years.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of, don't worry about diabetes, because diabetes, as long as you just use the insulin and take your numbers, you'll be just fine, which is not quite right. But, you know, if you want to listen to the doctors, then that's your response and your answer.
Yeah.
Or people can take life back into their own hands and start making decisions of what they want for themselves, their family, and how do they want to handle the things that are going on. That oftentimes is a choice. Other than that,
well, you know,
yeah,
everything's good. You know, good. We're talking about the vets. We're talking about the other topic. He addressed this one. This one's better than the one I was going to play, but I'll let you listen to this one.
Where's the morality in that? I don't understand our values. By the way, speaking of American values, aren't we about due to start bombing some small country that only has a marginally effective air force? It seems to me like we're a couple of weeks overdue to drop high explosives on helpless civilians. People who have no argument with us whatsoever. I think we ought to be out there doing what we do best, gang, making big holes in other people's countries. I hate to be repetitious, but God, we are a warlike lot, you know? We can't stand not to be fucking with somebody. We couldn't wait for that Cold War to be over, could we? Just couldn't wait for that Cold War to be over so we could go and play with our toys in the sand. Go play with our toys in the sand. And while we're not invading some sovereign nation or setting it on fire from the air, which is more fun, then we're usually declaring war on something here at home. Did you ever notice that? We love to do that, don't we? We love to declare war on things here in America. Anything we don't like about ourselves, we have to declare war on it. Don't do anything about it. We just declare war on it. We got a war. It's the only metaphor we have in our public discourse for solving a problem. It's called declaring a war. We got a war on poverty, war on crime, war on litter, war on cancer, the war on drugs. But you ever notice there's no war on homelessness, is there? Nah, no war on homelessness. You know why? There's no money in that problem. There's no money in that problem. Nobody stands to get rich off of that problem. You could find a solution to homelessness where the corporate swine and the politicians could steal a couple of million dollars each. You'd see the streets of America begin to clear up pretty goddamn quick. I'll guarantee you that. I will guarantee you that. Yeah. So, I got an idea for homelessness. You know what you ought to do? Give the homeless their own magazine. Give them their own magazine. It would make them feel better, for one thing. That's a sure sign of making it in this country. Every group in this country that makes it and arrives at a certain level has its own magazine. You have Working Mother magazine, Black Entrepreneur magazine, Hispanic Business magazine. In fact, any activity engaged in by more than four people in this country has got a fucking magazine devoted to it. Skydiving, mountain climbing, snowmobiling, backpacking, bungee jumping, duck hunting, shooting someone in the asshole with a dart gun, jerking off, they probably have a magazine for that. Really, I know they have a magazine. Walking! There's actually a fucking magazine called Walking. Look, Dan, the new Walking is out. Here's a good article, putting one foot in front of the other. Give them their own magazine. Give the homeless their own magazine. You know what you call it? Better Crates and Cartons. Then when they get finished reading it, they can use it to line their clothing. That's a good sound business solution. That's the kind of answer you get from a conservative American business manager. Yeah, let them read it. When they get finished reading, they can use it to plug up the holes and then piano crates they all seem to like to live in. A good, sound, practical, conservative American business solution. I'll tell you what they ought to do about homelessness. First thing, change the name of it. Change the name of the condition. It's not homelessness. It's houselessness. It's houses these people need. A home is an abstract idea. A home is a setting. It's a state of mind. These people need houses, physical, tangible structures. But where are you going to put them? Where are you going to build them? Nobody wants you to build low-cost housing near their house. People don't want it near them. We got something in this country, you've heard of it, it's called NIMBY, N-I-M-B-Y.
Not in my backyard.
People don't want any kind of social help located anywhere near them. You try to open up a halfway house. Try to open up a rehab center for drugs or alcohol. Try to build a little home for some retarded people who want to work their way into the community. People say, not in my backyard. People don't want anything near them, especially if it might help somebody else. Part of the great American spirit of generosity we're always told about. Big, generous American nation. Ask an Indian about that. Ask an Indian how generous this country is, if you can find one. You got to locate the Indian first. We've made him just a little difficult to find. Or, if you need current data, select the black family at random and ask them how generous this country has been.
Is that you, Tiger Lily?
Hi, Phil?
Yeah. Fran's on the line, too.
Oh, hi, Fran.
Hi, Tig. How you doing, girl?
Good.
Yeah.
Hi, what a coincidence that I just happened to have gotten on the show to listen to you know, Bikers of America, and I'm like, who's talking? And I really like what she's saying about death, you know, because, you know, I'm very comfortable with, you know, death. I mean, it's just inevitable. I think it's the ultimate insult to the ego, and it's something that everybody has to go through eventually. And I've lost both of my parents, my mom about 15 years ago and my dad about 12 years ago. And, you know, I didn't even cry at their funerals. And I think it was because, you know, they had cancer and, you know, it was more of a relief when they finally did pass on because they were in so much pain. But I'll tell you what, it really, you know, it kind of struck me. I got this email when I heard about John. And it's like, whoa, that came out of the blue. That was, to me, that was shocking. And you should know, I've never met John. I had never met him. But I spoke to him a couple of times over the telephone. He was following some of my work with the helmet issues in Nevada. And he gave me some really great pointers. And he was a real cheerleader for the work that I was doing. And it really made me take a moment. I had to take a moment to just, you know, think about him, because he, even though I didn't meet him and even though we just had maybe two or three phone conversations, he made that much of an impact on me that I thought, God, I can't wait to meet this guy because he's cool. I mean,
it's going to be a long time before you meet him, honey.
Yeah, unfortunately.
God willing.
God willing, yeah, because I have my son just married a gorgeous girl who has a six-year-old daughter, and so she calls me Granny. Hey, can you be quiet while Granny talks? and she was telling me, you know, she was asking me about my mother, and she goes, well, is she in heaven? And I said, yeah. And she said, well, you know, you're going to go to heaven too. And I said, well, I wouldn't be so sure about that, honey. And so, you know, we you know, she's, what do you mean by that? But I have a very macabre personality. Can you get rid of Kane, honey, please? So, anyways, I just wanted to share that with you, Fran.
Well, I do. Thank you, darling. Today was a rough day, I'm not going to lie. But you know what? It's a good day. I was supposed to go to a photography event tonight, and for some reason it was more important to be on the show. I doubt the lady that I asked to call in is going to call in, and it would be to her loss if she doesn't call in. But we'll leave that for another day.
Wow. Well, I thought a whole lot about your husband.
The flyer is almost ready to be sent out. We do have dates already. It will be next year, the 27th, at Fort Rosecrans, and the celebration of life will be the 28th, and that's a Saturday.
Shut the door,
Celeste. So that's on the books now, and that's in its works.
when you get that all together, let me know and I'll put it up for you, friend.
Well, I should have. I'm hoping that I will bring some with me on Saturday, because I plan
Sunday.
On doing it all day Saturday. Sunday. I'm sorry, all day Sunday. Need a little bit of a hurrah for a change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's going to be a good event. What we're talking about is the cover-up. What it does is it benefits the homeless. It's put on by the Pioneers and the, I want to say, the Sober Riders. And what they do is collect socks, blankets, clothing, whatever's laying around that you don't use anymore that someone could use. We ask that you donate it, and it will be given out to people that need it, that can't get it.
Well, I'll tell you something, young man. When you said that I should wash those things first,
yeah,
it took me 5 hours to wash all that stuff.
Yeah, but you know, in the end, it's gonna benefit somebody that can use it, friend. So a little elbow grease doesn't hurt. And then Tiger Lily, what's going on Sundays now?
Oh yeah, I've got a show. There's a station called FreedomizerRadio.com, and they're Blog Talk also. But they, in order to use Blog Talk, they go through their website. So the guy, he had heard me talking on an AM radio station. I was a guest speaker locally. And he heard me talking about my open carrying experience, where I got handcuffed for 56 minutes for open carrying and videotaping a police officer. So he found me, you know, through my name and stuff, and he contacted me and he asked me if I wanted to be a guest speaker on his show. And I said, sure. So I was a guest speaker twice, I think, and he asked me if I wanted my own show. And I said, at first, I'm like, because I had been thinking about it, because there's so many issues that I've got that I just want to be able to, you know, convey them to the world, you know, the things that I've learned about our government and liberty and freedom and rights and all of that. And I had thought about, you know, doing my own Blog Talk, and then mainly because I don't want to be censored. I don't want anybody telling me, oh, you can't say that, or, you know, you need to tone this down, or any of that crap. I mean, I'm 50 years old, and, you know, my parents are dead, my children are grown, and, you know, my husband's retired, so I really just have to answer to myself and to my husband a little bit, because he pays the bills. But so when my husband's listening, he says very little. And so I he asked me twice, and on the second time he gave me a specific date. He says, how about 90 minutes on Sunday evening from 6 to 7:30? And I said, okay. And I figured, you know, what's the worst that can happen is that I overstep my bounds and he tells me, get lost. But I did I did my first practice show 2 weeks ago, and then I did my last this Sunday I did a show, and he said it went pretty well. So and I'm enjoying this, because I'm downloading and uploading and getting little things doing. You know, I've listen to how you run your radio, Phil, and you know, like, and I actually have a little excerpt of George Carlin. I noticed you were playing him just a little bit ago, and I put some of that on the web, on the Blog Talk, to for the listeners to listen. And it's basically his skit about the rights. Do you remember him talking about rights?
Yeah, we played that last week.
Did you really?
Yes.
And
Once in a while, because people need to know. Even though the guy tells it the way it is, and he tells it humorously, he's telling the truth.
Yeah, but I'll tell you what. The first time I heard that, it was like it was an insult to me. I mean, it's like, oh, everything else is funny, but for some reason that really struck a chord with me. And I think it's because of the indoctrination that you know, people have died for rights, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But then, you know, I got a little depressed for a few days and would walk my dog and just kind of, you know, think to myself about this whole thing that he kind of smacked my ego, so to speak, George Carlin, through his comedy. And then I got to think of, I think, you know, I used to be a registered nurse, and there is nothing that we have that cannot be taken away, you know, because rights are things that cannot be taken away. And I'm thinking, well, even if I were in jail, which I ended up going to jail for 24 hours, that was an experience. But even if I were to be in jail, I'm thinking Gandhi, he was in jail for so long, but at least God gave you a mind to think. So nobody can take that away. And then I thought, well, gee, I'm a registered nurse. I know, yeah, you can take that away. And there are, look at what we do to our children. And any child who is, back in the day, my husband probably would have, even my son, be put on Ritalin because of the hyperactivity, because of the fact that the public school system doesn't meet their needs. I'm sorry, I'll stop.
No, you're just so damn lucky that you didn't put your kid on Ritalin. I remember when Ritalin came out, and Ritalin is a, and I'm going back to 1973, when I looked it up in the PDR, which PDR is the physician's desk reference book, and this one doctor I worked for refused to allow his daughter to use Ritalin because it was that dangerous. And then there was another family that I took care of their daughter, and their child was on Ritalin every day. And so since I was working at the doctor's house, I took the opportunity to read what Ritalin does. And Ritalin is a very, very dangerous drug. They've given it to children today as candy. Oh, you're so lucky. You're so lucky you didn't give it to your kid, honey.
Yeah, well, it's a means by which somebody can attempt to control you, keep you in line. And
yes.
That's not being a free spirit. That's not liberty. That's not anything that I grew up valuing or being told that I should value, because we live in the greatest country in the world.
Have you guys heard The Illusion of Freedom?
Tell me about it.
No. I'll let George tell you. He tells it best. Hold on 1 second.
The Americans seem to think that the party's going to last forever, and the holiday goes on, and they don't really see the error of certain things. I mean, Thomas Rainsford Lounsbury was an educator in the 19th century, and he said, "It never ceases to surprise me at the infinite capacity of the human mind to resist the introduction of useful knowledge." And that's what it is. People know better. People sense better. But they go against it. They just think there are no consequences.
It kills me that
it's a steady downhill slide. You know, we're headed. This country is really finished. I mean, it really is technically finished. It's just a matter of playing out the end game. Well, it's true. It's true. You can see it. You can smell it. Anyone who can't see it or smell it doesn't understand.
Yeah.
There's a medical term that they use in hospitals when a person has no future left on this planet. They can't be helped anymore. And they put it on the chart, CTD, circling the drain. And that's what we're doing. We're slowly circling the drain, and the circles get smaller, and they get faster. I enjoy it. Personally, I don't have a stake in the outcome. I personally enjoy circus that I've been invited to. I've often said, when you're born in the world, you're given a ticket to the freak show. When you're born in America, you're given a front row seat. And I couldn't enjoy it more.
And I'm talking about the fact a war is old men protecting their property by sending young men, or rich old men protecting their property by sending middle class and lower class young men off to die. It always has been.
Yeah.
It's all about owning the country. All of this back and forth and debate implies that there are really choices in this country, that we really have choices, freedom of choice.
Well,
it's an illusion.
Army.
Americans are made, they're having trouble filling the slots in this all-voluntary army. I wonder why. Let me say one thing about choice. There is no real choice. They say freedom of choice. You're given an illusion of choice. Americans are meant to feel free by the exercise of meaningless choices. You don't have, you know what
right.
The choices are in this country? Paper or plastic. aisle or window, smoking or not smoking. Those are your real choices.
You began to say, you began a sentence a little while ago, it's not a surprise. It shouldn't be a surprise. It should be a surprise that rich white men don't care about poor black people, period. So they're not high on their list. They're not high on their list.
They're not high.
They're not high on the subconscious list of those people who are in charge of things in this country. The owners, forget these foolish elections. The owners of this country don't care about the poor in general.
Karl Marx talking to me? The owners of this country are
no.
the voters of this
no,
country.
You're wrong about that, Mike.
Aren't the owners of this country the voters in this country
no,
who
no,
elected
no,
George
no,
Bush?
Not. Listen, politics, these elections are a charade. It is a charade.
Okay.
It is. They are meant to... Just listen for a minute. Learn a little something. The elections and politicians are in place in order to give Americans the illusion that they have freedom of choice. You don't really have choice in this country. I have an addendum. The real looting in this country takes place in the transfer of the wealth from the poor to the rich. I'm sorry that you don't like class and the truth, my friend, but you're just stuck with it. And the poor have been systematically looted in this country. The rich have been made richer under this criminal, fascist president and his government.
George, I think you know what fascism is.
When fascism comes to America, it will not be in brown and black shirts. It will not be with jackboots. It will be Nike sneakers and smiley shirts. Smiley. The fascism. Germany lost the Second World War. Fascism won it.
George, you think looting is okay if there's no hurricane?
First of all,
We're talking about no problem with theft.
May I be honest?
No problem with theft.
Sure, George is defending looting, but I have no stake in the outcome.
I think
we'll have to give them credit for one thing. You have to give them credit. They're out in the open now. They're not even trying to conceal it anymore. The owners of the country got their election. They said, we're going to get this election. We put you people in that court for a reason.
All right,
now
facts
the time
are
to pay
earth
us.
For you and, now.
Yeah, forget all that stupid. They're openly driving the bus, and we're all in the back.
Yes,
because of the energy policies that were created here in California, not as a result of a conspiracy,
but you don't need a formal conspiracy when interests converge. These people went to the same universities and fraternities. They're on the same boards of directors. They're in the same country clubs. They have like interests. They don't need to call a meeting. They know what's good for them, and they're getting it. And there used to be seven oil companies. There are now three. It will soon be two. The things that matter in this country have been reduced in choice. There are two political parties. There are a handful of insurance companies. There are about six or seven information things. But if you want a bagel, there are 23 flavors because you have the illusion. You have the illusion of choice.
Right.
You don't get the real importance. There's no freedom of choice.
Yep. Hit it on the head.
I mean, how free are we when we slave away and we work to purchase a home, even when you own a home? Try not paying your taxes on that and see what happens.
We lost six houses back east that way.
Mm-hmm.
And actually what happened is there was a failure to send notice, and because of the failure to send notice, because they have to advertise the piece in the newspaper, and they buried it instead of putting it where it belonged. And by the time we had the money to go pay the tax, it was already too late. It was gone.
Wow.
Yeah. And they were paid off. No, these houses were paid off. So,
Well, law enforcers, in my view, are not much more than armed thugs, really, to enforce laws that you know, here in the United States, we have more people in prison over nonviolent, victimless crimes than in probably all of the countries in the world put together. And we're supposed to be the freest nation give me a break. And when I say this to people, they think I'm some kind of unpatriotic person. But, you know, I spent 4 years in the Marine Corps. I went through the indoctrination, and you know, I was a left winger, and, you know, grew up as a Democrat, married a Republican, converted over, became independent, and most recently I am a registered libertarian. But I'm starting to even evolve from that. I mean, even if we do vote in Ron Paul, really, what can he do? This is a monumental monster that we have created. And yes, the Constitution served its purpose 200 years ago, but all countries, because of their government, collapse after 200 years. And that's just historic. It's a historical fact. And with the fact that we owe $15 trillion, I mean, I don't know how many, if you stack $20 bills, it could reach the moon, for heaven's sakes. I mean, I believe that the inevitable thing that's going to be coming is one day we're going to wake up and whatever money we have in the bank is going to be worth zero. And I say that because it happened in Mexico when I was about 17, 18 years old. I remember, you know, my parents were Mexican. Well, my mother, well, long story, but I grew up speaking Spanish in Indiana in my home. And one day there was something that their peso collapsed. And I remember hearing stories about people committing suicide over this because, you know, you had millionaires who woke up one day and they had nothing. And I just don't know what will happen if something like that were to happen in the United States. So
I play something every once in a while, and in the last few weeks I've been getting emails to play it again. And I don't know if you heard it earlier, but I think you'll enjoy this. This is only about 2 minutes and 18 seconds long, but this guy here, he's right on the money. So check this out.
This is to the government, the United States government. No, $14.6 trillion, B. All my credit cards would have been cut off a long time before that. All I'm asking y'all to do is balance the fucking budget, B. That's all y'all got to do. Son, we voted for y'all because we were worried about gay rights, marijuana getting legalized, all of these other things that we were concerned about. How can we get roads, more money for schools? You bastards can't even balance a checkbook. A checkbook, B? Something every American has to go through every week. We got to figure out what we're going to pay, what we got to put off a little bit. You bastards, the $14.6 trillion before you realize, oh, shit, we've reached the debt ceiling. Listen, you're the best and the brightest. Harvard, Yale, Brown, Cornell, this is what we put out. Should have went to Norfolk State. Bastards, you would have got the same education. You would have spent a whole lot less money. Simple fucks. All I'm saying to you is, and this isn't personal, this isn't Democratic or Republican, this is everybody. Stop being a dickhead and balance the fucking budget. My second question, though, my second issue is, how the fuck do you owe China, B? How you owe China? How can I tell my daughter with a straight face that capitalism is a better system than communism if we're borrowing all of our fucking money from the biggest communist country on the fucking planet? You ass, get your... Oh, stop your life, B. Get your whole shit together. Get all of your shit together. Don't do another press conference. Fuck CNN, MSNBC, Fox News. Don't do any more television appearances until you got my fucking budget balanced. And I'm going to tell you this. I'm going to tell you this. Everybody who has a loan to the federal government, fuck paying it. Don't pay your budget. Don't pay your bills because they ain't paying this. The fuck I got to pay my bills for if you don't pay your bills? I'm not doing what you don't do. You're the leader. I'm following. You don't pay, I don't pay. How about that, simple motherfuckers? What is your credit score? What's the government's credit score right now? It's got to be a 350. But you motherfuckers going to tell me I can't buy a car if my credit score is at a certain number? Your whole life is a 350, B. Your FICO score, your Experian, fucking TransUnion, all your shit's low, B. Get your shit together. President Obama, personal to you, all the black people was proud. We got a black president. You acting like one right now, B. Pay your fucking bills on time. It's too fucking hot for me to talk. I'm sweating and shit. Shit got me sweating. You know why? Because y'all ain't paid a fucking light bill on Earth. That's why 37 fucking states right now going through a heat wave. Because not only y'all not pay the fucking Chinese, y'all didn't pay the fucking light bill. You see how fucking hot it is? I'm pissed the fuck. I can't.
That guy's name is Thelonious Monk.
That's funny.
Trying to get him on the show.
I really like
I'm going to have to get you. I have to find it first. But I will have to get you John's brother. He wrote a song, and of course he's also dead, but he wrote a song of our American government of the right arm thugs. And I think that it falls into that category, and I think you'll enjoy it. I just have to find it, that's all. Just for a little bit of history, however, if you look at our economy, and if every time our economy goes south and dips real bad, you'll see that a war had been started to, one, nutrition of our male population, and also to reboost our economy at the same time. And it's always been over religion as well. So, like I said, if you go back through history, each one of those in history always repeats itself in one way or another. But that's pretty much what that is as well.
Yeah. Hey, Tiger Lily. You know, Carlin was talking about they were coming for our Social Security, and Fran, I don't know if you want to tell her the story, but Fran had an interesting conversation with the Social Security Administration today.
Oh, yeah, I'd love to hear it.
I finally got John's death certificate yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And in with the letters, I also had, which I thought was humorous, John had an increase in his Social Security, which he won't be able to collect the increase because he's dead. But he was going to get $270. So I figured, you know, it was only slight. I haven't made a lot of phone calls. There's a lot of phone calls I have to make yet. And so I call Social Security and say, I don't know what the procedure is because they don't give you any procedures to follow when somebody dies. You know, here's a list of numbers that you need to contact. They don't do that for you. So I called Social Security, and the woman says, well, do you want to put in a claim? And I said, well, I guess if that's what I'm supposed to do. She said, well, there's a one lump sum because of you know, your husband and what he was getting, and they already cut the Social Security off to you. And it was like, oh, well, okay, then I'll take the one lump sum. And my husband's one lump sum is so vast that I think that I can afford to take Phil, Bill, you, and I out for dinner.
Wow.
My husband is worth, and they're sending me a check of $255, the one lump sum.
Holy cow.
That isn't even enough to bury him, let alone cook him.
Right. That's sad.
I was like, really? And I had up to two years to claim it. Because if you don't claim it within 2 years, then you don't get it. You don't get the $255 either. So I thought that was kind of humorous. It's like, okay, thank God I'm working. Because if I hadn't been working, then what?
Right.
Would I have gotten half of the $270 a month? And that's not even going to pay the light bill. So when people think, well, you know, you're one step away from being on the street, we have so many people out there that are actually on credit card living.
Yeah. Down by work, there's at least four or five guys sitting in a wheelchair or whatever, but some of them I see, and I've seen them pushing the wheelchair and then sitting in the wheelchair. Now, something might be physically wrong, something might not, but there's the scammers. You know, there's one guy that stands out there with four or five puppies, saying he's homeless with the puppies, yet the other day I seen him get in a brand new Mercedes.
Yeah. You have those. And just to clarify that, in New York City, there was a lawyer, and he actually ended up panhandling down at Wall Street.
Mm-hmm.
And the interesting part to that was, because he was interviewed, I don't know if he's still there, but he actually made more money panhandling down at
Wall
Street than being a lawyer.
You know, some colleges have a class on teaching how to do that.
Really?
Yes, ma'am.
Are you teasing? I can't imagine that.
Well,
what, did they got a class to teach you how to panhandle?
Right.
Yeah, they do.
I don't have a problem. I do have a problem of people giving individuals money. Now, I always keep, when I do drive the van, which is not that often, I always keep water, and I will always offer a bottle of water to someone who's on the corner that is homeless. And most times, if that person opens that water and drinks it immediately, I will reach behind that seat and grab the two more bottles. Now, only in 5 years, I think there's only been three times that I have ever been refused for them to take water.
John Stoffel had a good show on. It's called Freeloaders, and he actually posed as a freeloader, you know, put a beard on and masqueraded, and was going around asking for money, and he'd use various techniques. One of them was, why lie, I need a beer, and another one, homeless, and you know, just little signs in different areas, and he basically found out that you can average about between $8 and $12 an hour by doing that. And he says, but are they freeloaders? But they aren't taking a gun and a stick to you to give them your money, unlike the government who does. They are the real freeloaders who are living the high life off of the backs of people who pay taxes. So that kind of put things into a different perspective for me, because I was with you before, too. Yeah, they're freeloaders, and I would say, before when I used to think we had rights, I would say they have a right. Who was it, Henry, that there was a very famous radio speaker, Phil Henry or something like that. He used to talk about homeless people who don't want to have homes. This is America, and they have a right to be homeless. And I guess they have a right to ask for your money. And you have every bit of obligation in some cases not to give it to them if you know that if you suspect that they're going to use it only to further harm themselves. If that's your moral code. So that's an honorable one. The point being that these freeloaders aren't using guns and badges to take our money, unlike the sanctioned criminals that we elect.
Well, I'm gonna back up a little bit on that. What studies have proven is once a person has lived on the street 6 weeks or more, it is very difficult for an individual such as that to turn around and then live what we would call a normal existence in a housing society and so forth. This has already been a proven documented from whatever science is.
That's a really good point, and I would add to that, you know, with all these this unemployment rate that we have and people running out of unemployment money, you know, because they ran out of their whatever many number of weeks they're entitled to. So
it's up to 2 years now, but I heard that they're going to go another year till everything turns around. But, yeah, we'll see if that happens.
Right. And so the longer somebody is on unemployment, the longer they get comfortable with that. And why go get a job? I mean, I would say very similar comparison. I mean, once you stop working for 6 weeks, like you said, that makes sense on a visceral level to me, that you lose your motivation to want to, you know, thrive, live, survive, and thrive.
Also, too, if you're on that and you try and go get a job, and for the last 2 years you've been sitting on your ass at the house, you think that guy wants to hire you?
Right. It's like, what? Pick tomatoes? Are you kidding me?
That's what
the wetbacks are for.
Someone I know went for a job, and the guy asked him if he would mind sweeping the floors or cleaning toilets, and he told him, are you going to pay my bills? I'll do whatever you want.
There you go. Yeah, that was my basic philosophy in life. You know, unless I sleep with you or you pay my salary, then you're not the boss of me.
You know, the one I was going to play earlier is George had something on freedom in society. So let me cue that up because I got something going on in the background.
Okay.
The interesting thing about this country is they talk about how we have freedom of choice. You know, we have freedom of choice. Very limited. It's an important thing, limited choice. Two political parties, essentially, two. Big media companies, five, mm-hmm. six.
Max.
Yeah. Oil companies, down to three now, I think, overall, three or four. Bank, the big banks, the big brokerage houses, the big accounting firms. All the things that are important, reduced in choice. Mm-hmm. Newspapers in a city, how many? Used to be three, four. Now it's one or two. They're owned by the same people, and they also own a radio station and a TV station. But jelly beans, 32
yeah.
flavors.
Yeah.
Ice cream, all the things that don't matter. The unimportant things, a lot of choices.
Yeah.
You know what I say? You know what your freedom of choice is in America? Paper or plastic.
Yeah.
That's it, man. It comes down to paper or plastic, cash or charge, aisle or window, smoking or non-smoking,
yeah.
Coke or Pepsi. These are your choices. Everything else is kind of laid out for you. You get to do what they really want. They do what they want. The
yeah.
ones who own this country, they do what they want.
Speaking of our choices being usurped or taken away from us, what do you make of what? And I'm fascinated to ask you this because all the things that you've been talking about for years
mm-hmm.
we've come full circle on this stuff. That's why I was so fascinated. Thank you for coming on the program.
Sure.
But here we are now, you know, 30 years after you were talking about it, with this huge debate, this huge fight about whether or not our civil liberties are being taken away from
yeah.
us. What are your thoughts on?
Well, I think if you looked at the record of laws which have been passed in the last 30 to 40 years, there's a thing called social hysteria.
Mm-hmm.
Social hysteria is whipped up generally by the media. Crime, in Nixon's time, crime was the big social hysteria issue. There's too much crime. The courts are coddling the criminals. We have tougher laws. So a lot of civil liberties went away in terms of the rights of criminals and the rights of the accused and people going on trial. These were limited. They were cut down. These rights, which are guaranteed by the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. Another social hysteria, drugs. The drug thing happened. Same thing. Big flow of drugs. We're going to fight the drugs. We need newer, tougher laws. We need draconian sentences. We need to be able to go into houses. We need to be able to do this. We have reasonable, you know, all of these shortcuts have resulted in less liberties because of social hysteria. The media whips up the frenzy. People get all excited.
Mm-hmm.
The legislature passes it. The president, the executive signs it. And the judges, then the judicial branch, okays it sometime later when it gets to them. And what has happened is you have less freedom, less liberties, less civil liberties, less rights. And the third social hysteria is terrorism. That was whipped up. Now, there's a little problem, a little more cause there. You look at the 9/11, it's a very dramatic event. But that, too, has been used with this Patriot Act to reduce our liberties. They say, well, if you got nothing to hide, what are you worried about? You know, that whole thing. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You have, tell me about the people that are, you know, just getting out of prison because of the DNA, if they had nothing to hide. It's just, listen, this country is owned by the ownership class. They do pretty much what they want. I think it's like a freak show. Here's what I do. You know what I do? To me, if you're born in the world,
yeah.
you get a ticket to the freak show. You get a ticket to the freak show. If you're born in America, you got a front row seat. So some people, freak show.
Yeah.
Freaks.
Yeah.
Then some people, they want to fix the freaks.
Right.
These are the ACLU lawyers, environmentalists. Well, let's fix the freaks. We're going to fix them up. Oh, isn't that terrible? Let's do this. And then there are folks who just watch the freak show.
Yeah.
As me. And some of us get to write about it or talk about it.
Right.
And I do that.
That's you too.
Yeah. And say, look at you. Look how badly you're doing. I don't even count myself in.
Yeah.
I say, look how badly you folks are doing. How did you do this to yourself? Why did you let them do this to you?
That's right.
Absolutely
right.
That is so good. Fran, did you know that, what's his name, Hannigan, that lawyer, that boat lawyer?
I know a lot of people by face. And
okay.
I'll clarify this for you for so you have a better understanding. Being a sign language interpreter, especially in New York, I was involved in a number of cases in New York, and it was real important for me to not remember names because if I couldn't remember names and I was given a lie detector test, I could pass that lie detector test hands down as long as they didn't show me a picture.
Right.
And so names, I, even now, but I'm no longer involved in any of that,
right,
to remember names is falls a lot short.
Well, it's Ray Henke. I just pulled up his email.
Oh, I know Ray.
Okay.
Yeah, I know Ray.
Did you get his email that he posted on the Bolt forum about your husband?
I have not seen a lot of things. And I mean, life has been a little bit hectic.
I'm sure.
And I'm still looking.
Would you like me to read what he posted on the Bolt forum about your husband?
Sure.
It's very nice. And very, very appropriate, I think. And it gave me a little bit more insight about him because I didn't know much about your husband other than that I connected with him on an activism level. He said, "My heart goes out to Fran and all those many who were touched by this big bear of a man with the softest voice and the most enveloping heart. He was an imposing figure with a mind sharp as a tack, able to bring together disparate political views in a way that made him a very special rights advocate. The first time I met him in person was in connection with our fundraising efforts for the Santa Cruz trial. He was what we needed at the time, someone well connected with a bait of California in Southern California, and yet one who was open and forced an opening with a bait to broaden our base of support in opening the membership in his chapter to the concept that the California helmet law might be brought down by the due process legal challenge being argued by Richard Quigley and Bolt. He opened the door to attempt to convince those in his chapter and one another and those surrounding in the San Diego area of the viability of our plan. He and the two chapters held a fundraiser for the trial at which Steve Bianco, Red, and I spoke, attempting to educate on the merits of the lawsuit and persuade those assembled to participate. He put his creativity into the fundraising, including the helmet toss, with prizes going to those who could throw a full-faced helmet 40 feet into a trash can. He and Red opened up other opportunities to speak, including to Southern California patch clubs. Don came down for one that I recall and stirred up the crowd, and then he was always present, a force most effective behind the scenes, including at Red's annual Independence Day Fuck the Helmet Law rallies. I recall one in which I'd ridden with an illegal trucker's cap helmet Quig had given with me, with Bianco's itsy bitsy teeny weeny beanie over it to aid as a quote-unquote retention device. Quig's helmet flew off on the freeway, but Fran was on the outside and kindly picked it up. Fran was always at Big John's side, and my heart goes out to her at what must be the most difficult time of her life. One of the last times Big John and I spoke was in a conference call about the recent California helmet law legislative effort. John broke into the conversation to say that the days were running short to support the initiative, and I immediately responded, or not. And then I just pushed to remind folks that there were two sides to the question whether to support it or not. I didn't hear him on the conversation after that, and I worried that he missed my immediate apology for interrupting him. I called to explain to him that this was a matter of contention with Bolt, and he waved off my renewed apology for cutting him off. And he had stayed on the conference call and had heard my apology at the time, and he said he understood our differences of opinion. He and I remained friends, but now I'm reminded of my lack of courtesy, the too quick or not. If you can hear me, brother, I miss you. Our world is so much smaller and less colorful and beautiful without you, but hopefully you will have the opportunity to reconnect with Quig and the others of our fallen brothers who have meant so much to those of us who remain. Ray."
Yeah, I remember that conversation.
That was that was when I actually met Hanky. And it was so funny because I put his hat. Well, you have to understand, my bike looks like Sanford and Son. Okay, there's a few things on it, and one of them it was a stuffed. I think it was a stuffed dog that was there, or a stuffed bear I had on the back.
which is a first aid kit. And so I put his hat on the stuffed animal that was on the back of the bike. And so they said, well, the hat belonged to that, you know, that big guy over there, the blonde. So I went over to him, and I didn't know who he was at the time. And I said, are you missing your hat? And he says, well, yes. I says, well, you'll go find it, but you're going to have to go ask that thing on the bike if you can have it back. And he's looking. I says, just go over there. And then he realizes that his hat is on a stuffed animal in the back of the bike. And,
oh my God.
And we have been friends ever since.
He seems like a really cool guy.
John had one of the biggest quirks that John had and hated most was being interrupted.
Yeah.
He and I've been married to him for 28 years. And he and I would still bunk heads over being interrupted. It was all right if he interrupted me, but for me to interrupt him was not really correct. It was like, well, I would do it anyway. So, but yeah, he had a real issue about that.
That's funny.
That was,
so he had a little narcissistic side to him that we didn't know about, huh?
I'm afraid so. Yes. Both gone.
Gosh, I love your style, Fran. I hope I can be like you if I outlive my husband, which I doubt will happen because we were talking about life and death and all of that and the macabre way that you talk about death and stuff like I do. I married my husband when I was 20 and he was 35, and we've been married for almost 30 years now. And my mother-in-law, when my son was born, he was born right away, and he had gastroschisis. He was sick. So my mother-in-law came over to visit, and the baby was born early. She was visiting for Christmas, so the baby was born on December 20th, and he wasn't supposed to be born until after she was gone. But she was there, and the kid was sick, and she stuck around. Long story short, she ended up moving in with us. And I'm thinking, well, God, how bad can this be? Because, you know, they're all white, and I'm a Mexican-American. And so we are always respectful to our elders, and we would never think of putting them in a home and all of that. So I'm doing some very nasty calculations in my mind, thinking, well, back then in the early 1980s, I think, well, women lived to about 70s, and I'm figuring my mother-in-law 65, she'll maybe another 10 years she'll croak and I'll have my house to myself, you know. And then, right. And then my mother dies at 60. My father dies at 65. And I come to realize that her mother lived to be 102. So I'm doing the math thinking the old broad is going to outlive me, you know.
Probably.
But no, she finally passed away, but she just typical of her. If you've ever watched Everybody Loves Raymond, I can so identify with Deborah, with the only exception that I always worked, and I worked just to get, and I put in as much overtime as I could because I just didn't want to be around that old woman, and because she was just so annoying. And come to find out that, you know, she was dying of cancer, not of cancer, of an enlarged heart, and she was like on. And her other daughter-in-law that I kind of shipped her away for a little while, her other daughter-in-law, the white chick, she knows about hospice, and she said, we don't know what she's hanging out for. And, you know, she should have gone already like a couple of days ago. She's like in this coma, and we don't know what's – and I said, I know what she's waiting for. That old broad is waiting for my birthday. She just wants to put a little kink in my birthday because it was like very close to my birthday. It was about 2 weeks into my birthday. So I was a registered nurse at the time, and this was about 5 years ago. And I was doing a night shift job and in neonatal intensive care. And I was doing my charting. And so all of a sudden the date changed from March 8th past midnight. It's March 9th. And I just paused and I said to myself, I bet you my mother-in-law is dying as we speak. And they're like, oh, you're so sick. You know, don't talk about death. And So I came home at 8 o'clock in the morning, and my husband, uncharacteristically, he's usually asleep, he was sitting up in bed drinking a cup of coffee, and he says, "Mom died." And you know what I said? I just sighed this sigh, and I said, "How about a happy birthday to me?" And he says, "It's all about you, isn't it, Lily?" I said, "Now it is." But the old broad had the last laugh because a year later, I was doing a job in Las Vegas, and my husband was with me, and my son was working in Texas, and he was, I guess, about 20 years old, and my husband called my son when on my birthday and said, "Son, do you know what day it is today?" And he says, "Wednesday." And he goes, "No, what day of the month is it?" He said, "March 9th. He goes, "Doesn't that ring a bell?" And guess what he said? "Grandma died." That was the last. That was the ultimate "fuck you" to Lily from the grave.
Or you can look at it this way. She wanted to make sure that you celebrated it. It's time for you to celebrate it. There's a difference.
And I'll be on. And my husband, he knows how I talk about his mother, and he always says, "Honey, you are a saint to have put up with her." And I, you know, he loves me for that because, you know, I held a lot of, you know, aggression, and I probably made myself sick, you know, a lot of times. But, you know, holding in all of that anger that I had, because I rarely showed that I was angry. But she was the kind of person that, if I'd come home and I'd help her clean up, she goes, "Why don't I clean up good enough for you?" And if I didn't, she'd say, "Well, are you too lazy to help me?" So there was just no winning ever. And she was a beautiful lady. She was tall and blonde and, you know, gray-haired, of course, and very light-skinned, fair-skinned German. And, of course, my children are, I call them the Pintos because they're half-breeds. And she would say things like, "Them kids, they wash and wash and wash their hands, and they never seem to come clean. I guess that's just the color of their skin." Take care of that, Fran.
Oh, God. You know what? And that's when you shake your head and say, "You know, you're right." I guess.
Well, you know, George also did on something on what to do after someone dies. So I figured with the humor that you guys just did, we'll get a little more.
Okay.
So you know what I've been doing? Going through my address book and crossing out the dead people. You do that?
We did that. John and I actually did that in our roller jet last year.
To another old friend. But you can't do it too soon, you know. You can't do it too soon. You can't come running home from the funeral and get the book out, you know. You can't do that. A little time has to pass. You have to let a little time go by. I have a rule of thumb, 6 weeks. If you're a friend of mine and you're in my book and you die, I leave you alone for an extra 6 weeks. 6 extra weeks in the book on the house, it's on me. But after that, hey, facts are facts. Fuck you, you're dead. Out you fucking go. You gotta have standards, you know. Now these days a lot of people don't keep analog address books anymore. They don't want to be writing that stuff out longhand. They're in the computer age, and they have an application in the computer called Outlook or Contacts or Address Book, something like that. So they keep all the information in the computer, and they sync it up with their phone every day or every other day. So now, instead of scratching out a name, you get to delete the fuck. And deleting someone is an even more powerful feeling than simply scratching out a name. You know how to delete someone. You select the name, highlight the person, and then... trash. Now, if it's a really close friend of yours, you might not want to empty the trash for about 6 weeks.
That's cute.
Too harsh for you. Too harsh to delete an old friend. You can always create a new folder. A special folder for dead people. You keep it on your desktop. It's kind of a digital purgatory. nice thing is every now and then you can open it up and you can look inside. And you can see the people in purgatory. You can move them all around, you know, move them around. Put them in little groups, two people who can get along in life. Put them in the corner, let them work it out. Let them work it out in purgatory. Or start a fight, have a big fight in purgatory. That's all. Nobody's going to get hurt. They're all fucking dead anyway. Then you put them in a big formation and have a parade. The Purgatory Parade of Dead People. Ah, there's a lot of fun you can have with a computer. So enjoy your digital selves. Now, speaking of dead people, there are things we say when someone dies. Most of us say, a lot of us do, things we say that no one ever questions. They just kind of go unexamined. Give you a couple examples. After someone dies, the following conversation is bound to take place, probably more than once. Two guys meet on the street. Hey, did you hear? Phil Davis died. Phil Davis? I just saw him yesterday. Yeah. Didn't help. He died anyway. Apparently, the simple act of your seeing him did not slow his cancer down. In fact, it may have made it more aggressive. You know, you could be responsible for Phil's death. How do you live with yourself? Here's another thing they say after a death. This is usually said to the surviving spouse. Listen, if there's anything I can do, anything at all, please don't hesitate to ask. What are you going to do, a resurrection? Well, fine, why don't you come over this weekend? You can paint the garage. Bring your plunger. The upstairs toilet overflowed and there's shit all over the floor up there. You drive a tractor? Good, that'll come in handy. The North 40 needs a lot of attention. Bring your chainsaw and your pickaxe. We're going to put your ass to work. Who wants to help? Fuck 'em. Call us bluff. Call us bluff. Don't hesitate to ask. The nerve of these pricks.
Okay.
That is so good. That's what I was saying about George Carlin, because he was never one to dance with words. And
no. And
he put it on the table. He made fun of people who danced with words and actually bastardized our language by doing that and changing the meaning of our language.
Right. And I think that's when I started listening to the show, I heard you talking about, you know, the different ways you say death, you know, pass on and, you know, kick the bucket or, you know, dead, expire, what, like a credit card, you know?
Yeah, right. I mean, no, he's not coming back. He left for a while, yes.
Right.
You can meet him if you wish, but it's going to take long distance.
Right. So, Fran, I've got to leave. My dogs are chomping at the bit for me to walk them out, but I'm so glad I stopped in and that I got to at least hear of you. It was just like it was meant to be. It was like fate almost, because I had been thinking about your husband. And I should have stopped talking about myself so much to hear more about John, but I got to run now.
Oh, but you know what? It all comes in together, and it's all good.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Godspeed to both of you guys. Take care.
All right, you too. Talk to you Thursday.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hopefully, with some of the subjects that we have touched, there are people out there that need to understand that it may appear that I'm taking this lightly. There is no way to take a death lightly.
No, there isn't.
At the same time, you do need at some point to bring in some levity. You have to have to bring back in laughter. At that point, that laughter, that the break relieves that tension of pain and loss.
Right.
At that point in a person's well-being. And it was interesting because, like I said, I'm actually not surprised but that the person that was supposed to call in, that she obviously has not called in.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if you caught that on Facebook, what slightly transpired Thursday night.
No, I didn't.
Okay. I'll give you a little bit of background on that.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had used the car to drop off, I had a little bit large load to drop off.
Right.
And so I went over to help the Soldier Angels booth, and I was using the scooter. I parked the scooter over on the sidewalk, and she informs me that I can't leave the scooter there.
Okay.
I go and I get on the scooter, and I go to the front of the where the booth is. I'm volunteering here. And
Was this last Thursday?
Okay. This is called like a farmer's market down in Oceanside.
Right.
And so then what happens is the woman that was objecting to my scooter being there, instead of asking me to repark it,
mm-hmm.
she wanted it gone.
Wow.
So I got on it and I brought it to the front of the booth in which I was volunteering to help. Because
mm-hmm.
I don't have a problem helping somebody. I do have a problem helping someone who's an asshole.
Right.
And she has
not
called.
I think we all do.
Well, I don't have time for that. I'm out there
yeah.
to help people. Okay? She actually turned down a woman saying, oh, well, don't bring toys for tots here because I don't collect toys for tots. Instead of saying, you know what, if you can't find the correct place to put it, please do drop it off here and I'll make sure it gets to the right military children.
Right.
Which she did not do. But that's another whole thing. So the woman that's running the this farmer's market,
mm-hmm.
Being very rude. So I bring the scooter
yeah.
out front, and she said, well, you can't park it there. And I said, excuse me? I said, you're telling someone who is disabled that they cannot have their scooter.
Right.
At that point, she realized that she messed up. She called some man in, and I think it was like her supervisor kind of person.
Uh-huh.
Because at that point, he's saying, look, it was a misunderstanding, da-da-da-da. We're doing this as a favor to the Soldier Angels so that they can collect socks for the military. And it's like, you know something? I don't care what you're doing. I don't care what you're doing to help each other because you're helping each other. That's not just having somebody there, okay?
Right.
I know how to set that stuff up because I did it for years. However, to tell somebody that they cannot have their scooter or park their scooter someplace where it is safe, I actually wanted her name because at that point I was so angry, I was actually contemplating of putting in an ADA lawsuit against that farmer's market. I don't know if that man realized how close. Now, I don't know if he called somebody. I did give him my card, so he may have called somebody. I don't know if
uh-huh.
he called Bill. But at that point, when I said that I was going to be on the show, he didn't come back to be on the show, obviously. I do know that the woman that would refuse to give me her name, which wouldn't be hard to get anyway, because all I have to do is go back there, find out who's running the show, and I'd still get her name. And the Soldier Angels, hers would be really easy to get to because of she is the person who is running it. Like, okay, so you're more important, and you decide what people will do. You will boss people instead of being polite, I know that I can be abrupt, but you know something? To the people that count, like the woman who came by and was in tears because she needed help for her son, or
wow.
the person who needed a wheelchair for a military person.
Right.
You know what? I don't care what Soldier Angels are doing, but you first find out what these people need and find a way to help them.
Yeah.
And so
that's
I
the
would,
thing. That's the thing, friend. Even the ones that are doing that, and you know, most people don't know that they only have to give 5 to 10% of the whatever they collect to the charity. The rest they pocket.
I don't know how much Soldier Angels do and not do, and so that part, I'm not going to slander Soldier Angels because they could be a very good, reputable. They do get letters to our military and so forth.
Oh no, I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is most people don't know. I mean, I had some stuff go on with a diabetes person who wanted to do something for diabetes. And I talked to the dealer for them, and they had the thing there. And up until the week before, the dealer didn't know what was going on. And then it was like a clusterfuck. And then when we found out afterwards, they collected almost $8,000 and gave $800 to the charity and pocketed the rest.
Ooh.
Exactly.
Yeah, this is the reason why the Love Ride, if you ever look at the actual intake and the distribution of the money of the Love Ride, one would have to question, is that really the best place to put your money?
Yeah.
And
well, you know, we did that. We filmed Love Ride 17. And
oh, I didn't know
the guy that, yeah, the guy that filmed it, Oliver wanted money to let us film when we were going to help promote it, but he wanted money up front to let us do it.
Sure, why not?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's honest.
You know, ended up selling the bills for $5 a piece, but I don't remember how many exactly they sold. And you know, people were like, well, some of them were nervous because they said, well, I got to give you money now. How do I know I'm going to get the video? Well, Bill and I told them, yeah, if you pay us now, you know, if you pay for it now, you're going to get the video. Guarantee it.
By the way, I was signing a song, but I'm going to need a video tech that can splice and dice the pieces, the best pieces in the song with motorcycles in the background. It was done with a green screen.
He'll be there Sunday.
Okay. I'll try and get the DVD before Sunday.
You've met Pete Alva, right?
I know people by face, honey.
Okay. All right. Well, he'll be there Sunday.
This is something I need done before the celebration of life.
Okay. I'm sure we can hook that up for you.
Okay.
I'll talk to him when I see him Sunday. And then
I love
Teresa just joined us again. How are you, Teresa?
I'm wonderful. And yourself?
Not bad. Over my cold.
Oh, well, that's good. What kind of video or editing do you need?
Okay, what I did is there's a biker song that I took from one of the websites that I view. And what it is, it's a song of the last soldier riding away, and it's a fighting last rebel, okay?
Okay.
And what I've done is I have already done the sign language part of it to the music. In the background is green screen.
Okay.
So now what I need done is, I don't know, I'd have to look to see how long it is, but video on the green screen, in other words, take the green screen and put bikers in motion while I'm interpreting this song.
Okay. That's beyond my capability right now. I'm trying to think of who I know in California that could help.
I know we're going to have somebody.
Yeah. I got a guy for you. Pete Alba.
Okay.
He's the one that's making that biker movie right now.
Oh, I guess. Yeah, I think he would have the capability, yes. Now, the other song has nothing to do with biking, but
okay.
It's something that is real dear to my heart. And it's a song that was written for Now I Lay Me Down to Sleep.
Okay.
I'm into a lot of heavy shit. I guess you can figure that.
Yeah.
And what it is that I would like to have in the green screen, and what it is a man and a woman and gave birth to a baby, and now these people in white coats came in, heads bowed low, and then they walk away, they close the curtain, and the guy sings to the baby, in other words, you've just arrived, and now we're saying goodbye. So the
mm-hmm.
baby was born, and now is dead. And it's an awesome song, and having it interpreted and having that ghost figure of a husband and wife and a baby actually acting out essentially that song would be wonderful.
Right.
I mean, that's not a real priority. I mean, I've done the interpretation on tape already.
Right.
But the one that is critical is the one, the Rebel song, and the Last Soldier, because that I do want to play at the memorial next month.
Okay. I don't, right now that is beyond my capability. I basically I'm a writer and I do some digital production, but I basically I'm limited to what I can do because I've just got Windows Movie Maker and a few other smaller programs. I can't do green screen yet. We don't have that capability. There's got to be somebody in California.
Yeah, we got a guy.
Okay. What kind of program do you have next month?
It's a celebration of life. My husband's dead, and I did this song. When I heard this song, it was such a grab because of the message, and actually, all of us. We are all rebels in our own right,
mm-hmm.
and we have to keep going. Regardless of what is going on in life, we have to continue our fight.
Right.
So that's what this really comes down to.
So basically, you know, it's a very positive message that you're trying to sell, send out, that the only time you really lose is when you give up.
That's what John did. I don't know, that's, when John went into the hospital, they took him in by ambulance because a nurse convinced him that he had to go by ambulance, which was a really good thing. He had two fractures in his back. John was 400 and some pounds, which the weight is what caused the fractures.
Mm-hmm.
Then, he made sure that the doctors knew that he had a DNR.
Okay.
When the doctors came in to officiate that's what he was saying, and, in other words, doing a verification,
right.
That's when John came out and said, I'm 250 pounds overweight, I'm diabetic, and up to this point, you have to understand, I had already done 10 years of bedside care of his father and quite a couple years of bedside taking care of him. And
mm-hmm.
so when he was in the hospital, he had said, my wife should have some kind of life. And it was interesting because I knew... Even when you know, the other part of your brain is saying, no, he's just, you know, covering his bases, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's not that's not what he was doing at all. He was telling all of us that this was it. This he was checking out.
He was saying goodbye.
Yeah, he was saying goodbye. What I have found out is that he had actually been calling people for over a month, saying that he wouldn't be calling anymore, using his hearing aid situation as an excuse.
So
he. Go ahead.
Well, he made the decision within himself, and he was comfortable with it.
Correct. And like I said, I knew. But even knowing, you don't want to always accept.
He was tired, and he loved you enough that he thought he was making the decision for both of you.
And he was.
Which really wasn't fair.
He gave the biggest gift of all, and that big gift was actually dying so that I would have some kind of life to enjoy something instead of taking care of a second person for another 10 or 15 years.
Right.
And he knew that. And he didn't want that for me.
Nah, he was a hell of a guy.
Yeah.
But, I have another caller from 213. Is that you, Dean?
Yeah.
How are you?
Good, man. What's happening?
Not much. I got a message from Andy, and I sent you a couple of things, and I put you on my mailing list for the show. I have Fran from San Diego and Teresa from Michigan, and this is Dean from up in L.A. He happens to be a comedian, and he sent me an email saying that he's going to have a show. Is it this weekend at 9:30?
It's Thursday night, 9:30, Laugh Factory in Hollywood.
Oh, cool.
And it's basically, it's going to be me, Chris D'Elia from the show Whitney.
Uh-huh.
And we're doing like a music-based comedy show where we're going to do comedy, but we're going to be doing funny stories about rock and music, you know?
Uh-huh.
And it's the first time we've tried it. It's called Heavy Mental, so we're going to see how it goes.
Okay.
But the reason I was calling is if anybody in the L.A. area wants to come and be on the guest list, they can hit me at deandelrey@yahoo.com.
Yeah, if you want, I'll put that on the blog for you. It gets, today we had over 40,000 hits, 40,172.
Wow. It's a really cool show, and if anybody's ever been to the Laugh Factory, it's just top-notch place, you know? And, you know, it's just it's a great night, especially around the holidays. Some people, they need to get out and laugh, you know?
Yeah, and kind of what we were talking about while you were on hold there a little bit, you heard, and sometimes we do need to laugh, and sometimes we need to cry, and I felt that this time we might need a little bit of laughter.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's always great to get out and laugh. I always find that when people come and see us at the Comedy Store, the Laugh Factory, the Improv, they always say the same thing when they leave. They go, man, I really should do this more often, you know? Like, sometimes you got to twist people to get them out of their house, and then when they get out, they realize how great it feels to go out and laugh at comedians, you know?
Right. Anybody have any questions for Dean?
What's the premise? What's the basic, hook for the show?
The show is basically, I played music for about 25 years, and now I do stand-up comedy. And there's a lot of comedians out there that do bits about music and, you know, different things, maybe rock bands or concerts they've gone to or, you know, groupie girls, whatever. It's just all kinds of funny premises about the music world brought into a comedy atmosphere, you know. I toured with the Rolling Stones for about 4 years as a host and a DJ for their parties. So I like to tell stories about some of the funny things out there. And other guys have funny stories themselves. You know, Hollywood's a big music town. And comics and musicians cross paths all the time. So there's funny stuff about it, you know. People like rock and roll stories.
So it's a little bit like real life meets the bizarre happenings behind the scenes.
That's right. I mean, everybody has a funny story, you know.
I have the little clip that you sent me. If you like me, I can play that.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that's recently I was on a show with Kevin Nealon, you know. And that's a funny clip, you know.
Okay. Well, I'll cue that up right now. Here we go.
Ladies and gentlemen, this guy, Dean Del Rey. Give him a nice hand. Come on. I'm from San Francisco. You ever been there? No? You're looking at me like, oh, he's a gay comic. Right. People think everyone in San Francisco is gay. It's so weird. Like, it's just a gay city. Right. Two streets are gay in the whole town. I don't know how it got this reputation. Two fucking streets. It's not like you fly in with your family on vacation, right? You get off the plane like, oh, right. And they go, welcome to San Francisco. And then they just pour a bucket of dicks on you. Oh, man, kids, get out of here, come on. Like it's fucking Vietnam of dicks. You ever had a bucket of dicks pouring on you? Not nice.
How long have you had the tattoos? Sleeves. They call them sleeves.
Yeah, sleeves.
Do you think that, isn't it true after you've had tattoos for a long time, the ink starts to meld into the...
I think on the old ones. The old ones. Like the old army ones, yeah, but the new ones are like...
Because I know the Blue Man Group was all tattoos at one point.
That's what I heard.
And then it kind of just washed into all blue.
Now they're the Gray Man Group, because they're out in the sun and the blue turns to gray.
Is that what happens with tattoos?
Yeah, it's just the Gray Man Group.
The black people, they really can't get tattoos.
No, they all got them. Like all the basketball guys.
Yeah, but you can't really see them that well.
That's true. I don't know why they waste their money.
Maybe if we came up with an ink that was like fluorescent or something.
They have that.
They do?
They have an ink where they put it on you, you don't see it. Then if you're in a club, and like a nightclub, your tattoo lights up. That's a true story.
I like that.
So you could have secret tats.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
If I was a tattoo artist, I would do that on people. I would put like my little stuff on there.
Yeah, at secret messages like I suck dick on their neck. They don't know, and then they get in the club. People are like, "What is on your neck?"
Yeah. Do you ride a motorcycle?
I do.
Have you ever fallen?
One time behind here at the Laugh Factory, and I've been riding 25 years. I was pulling into the factory, and some guy came pulling in, which is ironic. He was in a Prius trying to save the planet. He flicked his cigarette out. Right, littering and arson in his Prius.
Oh.
He doesn't even see me. Turns in, like, whoa, and I lock him up and I fall over, right? Just real slow. Out back, brand new bike. I'm pissed. This guy runs up. I go, okay, at least he's helped me up. This guy comes over and goes, I saw the whole thing. And the other guy drove off.
Oh,
f***ing guy.
That's what I would have done if I was the guy that cut you off. I would have got out of the car, ran over to you, go, I saw the whole thing.
Yeah.
That prick left.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't remember, like, yeah, where is he? And then he points out another guy, and I beat him up.
I've almost taken out a lot of motorcycles in my car because I don't see them coming.
Yeah.
Right? You guys ever, like, almost hit a motorcycle and open up a door? And then on the freeway, usually they're out of cars.
Here's an interesting story on that.
I get that, though.
It's usually older white men that are angry. It's crazy. They're, like, driving, and they'll see me, and they're like, oh, no, you don't. And it's legal, you know? I'm like, hey, Dick, you should be looking at me as, like, a superhero. Like, that guy didn't marry the wrong woman. Yeah, he's a superhero.
Del Rey.
That's cool. If your show is anything like this, it's gonna be a hit, man.
Wonderful.
Yeah, man. I hope some people want to come out. DeanDelRay@yahoo.com. I will put them on the free guest list. It's at 9:30 on Thursday. Also, I have a radio show every Thursday at 12 noon where I have different musicians on and stuff called Poolside with Dean Del Rey. And that's Poolside with Dean.
If you send me that link, I'll put it up in my... Yeah, if you send me that link, I'll put it up in my friends column for you.
I will, man. Thanks a lot, guys.
No worries. And hey, when's Andy? Andy's due by what, 2-3 months?
I guess he's going to be out there till February, he says.
Oh, okay, cool. I'm glad he got a good gig.
Yeah, me too. I mean, after Sons of Anarchy, you know, he's back out there like auditioning and everything, and you get a good gig, it's great, man, because, you know, you can go a long time without an acting gig, you know. I did a movie with Quentin Tarantino called Hell Ride, the biker movie. I did a movie with Ice Cube, but, you know, in between, sometimes it's long stints, you know, and sometimes you work like crazy. So that's how the business is.
Yeah, when I introduced my partner Bill to Andy, I told him, I said, hey, Bill, I said, you remember this guy, don't you? He's the one they threw off the roof. And Bill's from South Boston, Irish Catholic. So he told him, hey, you know what? I can understand you being an Irish guy in Ireland. That's cool. He said, but you were a Protestant. No wonder they threw you off the fucking roof. Yeah.
That's awesome, man.
But they hit it off, so we've been friends for a long time. So everything worked out good.
I appreciate the support, man.
I'm going to give you guys a true story.
Go ahead.
This is a friend of mine in New York. And this guy robs a purse from this elderly woman that's walking and talking to this young priest. The cops actually catch the young man with the purse, and the cop says, you know, of all people, you've chosen. You actually had to choose a little old lady that was, you know, with her son, that's the priest, and you're going to end up paying for this. He says, what, with that priest? That priest is only a priest. What is he going to do? He says, no, no. It's not the priest that you, the son that you have to worry about. It's the other one. And the other one was in a much stronger Italian group that was definitely going to take care of him. So, yeah, like, oh, and then he actually begged. He begged the cops to let him go. Because at that point he realized that his days were numbered.
Yeah.
Yeah, you robbed the wrong person.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'm afraid so.
Hey, Dean, how well did you know Tarantino?
Well, I did the film, but I only saw him twice. Once was during the editing, and the other time was I sang some of the soundtrack for the movie.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't see him a lot because this particular film, he was the editor and the producer and not the director. So originally he was supposed to play the role of Comanche, who was played by Eric Belford later. But he was originally going to be in the film and at the last minute decided he was never going to act again. So, but I did get to work pretty extensively with Dennis Hopper. It was his last film he made before he passed. He told me some great Easy Rider stories. I also worked with, on that film, Michael Madsen, who's great, you know.
Do you know Brenda Fox?
I don't. Who's that?
Oh, okay. She was in that movie, too.
Oh, the reason
what was her
I
name?
Have...
Brenda Fox.
She must have had a small role or something. I don't know.
Yeah, she was one of the chickies. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Well, I'm in that main scene where I dive in the oil wrestling, so.
Oh, okay.
There is a reason that I ask. I'm also a filmmaker, but I've got on the back burner, it's called Swamp Rats, and it is an original film that basically takes the essence of the Magnificent Seven, updates it, and turns it into a family man drama. Now, excuse me, I take that back. It's a coming-of-age film with a tagline of Truth Heals Old Wounds, and I'm looking for a home for the script.
Right. I mean, it's a tough grind out there, you know?
Yeah, I know.
It's weird because I don't really know how scripts get made these days, you know? There's just millions of them out there.
Well, there's a millions of really good ones, but there's a whole lot of bad ones, too.
I mean, there's so many movies that just get remade, which I don't really understand, when there's a million great original scripts out there. I mean, I read scripts all the time. So does people like Andy when you're auditioning all the time, and you're like, this is a great script, and you can't believe it hasn't been made, and you find out, like, you know, that it's been on the shelf for 15 years. You're like, what?
Yeah.
You know, they make a new Karate Kid, but they don't make something original. I don't know. I mean, you know, my fear is they're going to remake Jaws, and that's my favorite movie ever. If they remake Jaws or The Godfather, it'll just be done for me.
Well, a couple of idiots are going to be, they're trying to remake The Birds, you know, Alfred Hitchcock.
Yeah,
the man was the master.
I mean, you know, it's just stupid. It's like we already saw those films, and people that didn't can rent them and watch a masterpiece.
Yeah. I'm executive producing my first film. It's a paranormal romance called Never Can Say Goodbye, and it's going to be followed up by a military series called Operation Home Base.
Nice.
So, would you like to read part of the Swamp Rats?
Sure. Just email it to me, Dean Del Rey at Yahoo.
I can do that. And it's rough draft.
Right.
But it's put it this way, it's four hours work.
Right. Gotcha.
So I'd be interested I will send it to you and I'd be interested in your feedback.
You got it.
Thanks.
Okay, what I'm going to do is, Dean, you're welcome anytime, anything you got going, you want to promote, Teresa, you know.
I've got to hang up, my other phone's ringing.
That's awesome.
All right, Fran, take care.
I appreciate it, man. Thank you, and, you know, stay in touch, man. I'll call you once a week and give you a little bump up there.
All right, man, thank you. We'll talk to everybody soon.
Brother. Okay, see ya.
I'm going to let Mike P, the big homie, take us out with One Percenter. Teresa, if you want to call in Thursday, that's cool.
Okay, that's cool.
All right. Good night, everybody.
Good night.